It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Ted Pollenbaum was a Boston-based freelance photojournalist. He completed hundreds of assignments for Life, Time, Look, the Saturday Evening Post, and many other publications. He traveled the world and took remarkable pictures. His collection is now housed at the museum in Washington, D.C., and selected photos are now available in the new collection, Juxtapositions. They are lovingly curated and edited by his daughter, Judy Pollenbaum. She's professor emerita of journalism and mass communication at the University of Iowa. She'll be sharing her father's work at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. And she is here with me now. Hello, Judy.
Hi. Thanks for having
me. Well, thank you so much for being here today. And your father did not set out to be a photojournalist, although he had a love of taking pictures from early childhood. He started his career as a more traditional journalist. What were his goals? What did he plan to do with his life?
I don't think he had a master plan, but after he married my mother and finished college, he became a newspaper man and worked at a small paper in Pennsylvania. And then my parents decided to move back to the New York area where they were both from. But my dad ended up getting a news writing job in Boston with United Press. And I guess he figured that he'd probably stay in the journalism business for his life, but mostly as a reporter and writer.
And then,
as a result of having been in a radical student group in college, it was called the John Reed Club, named after the chronicler of the October Revolution. The campus was Yale. My father was in the same graduating class as George Bush Sr. George Bush Sr. and the Blue Bloods were in Skull and Bones, which is very famous. But my dad was in the John Reed Club, which brought radical speakers to campus. That was the main activity. And so he landed on a list. There were many lists that were deemed subversive. And in 1953, when my mother was pregnant with me, my dad was subpoenaed to appear before the House Committee on Un-American Activities, which was conducting the very un-American activity of investigating what it deemed subversion in education.
And your dad was already clearly a remarkable man at that point. He was asked to go appear, asked, demanded to go appear in front of this House committee. And he had nothing to hide, but he was very upset about what was going on. How did he choose to respond to this?
Well, at the time, the people who took the First Amendment as a defense against testifying before these inquisitorial committees were prosecuted, and some landed in jail. But the Fifth Amendment had been shown to be a useful protection. So my father took the Fifth Amendment, which meant that he was refusing to talk about his political affiliations and views. But at the same time, he accused the committee of trampling on the Bill of Rights, of violating due process. He was 28 years old, and when I finally looked up his testimony, I thought he was very brave. His response was, worse things happen to people every day. I wasn't getting my fingernails pulled out. But he was fired as a result. And at my mother's insistence, he started on a career that was of great interest to him as a freelance photographer. And within a few years, he had broken into Life, which didn't care about the blacklist, interestingly enough.
That is really interesting because a lot of people lost their careers over being blacklisted. And his career obviously was affected and changed by being blacklisted. But this is almost a kind of the serendipitous moment for him where he turns toward his life's passion because of McCarthyism.
Yeah. And he worked very hard at his job, but he never considered himself an artist. He just constantly took pictures and constantly talked to people and constantly brought his portfolio from the Boston area where we lived into New York. And finally, Life just began giving him Boston area assignments, and he was very good at what he did. And then he also, his whole life, did independent projects that were even that were actually far more important to him than the sort of celebrities and politicians and big names that he was constantly encountering as a life photographer.
As you were growing up, did you know about the blacklisting? Was that something you talked about in your family?
We didn't talk about it much. It was kind of family lore. It wasn't until I was actually doing a doctoral program that I descended into the bowels of a university library and looked up his testimony, which now you can find on the internet. But then you really had to go looking for it. I was blown away.
Wow. Well, and I'm sure it was probably easy as a child to kind of take for granted what your father was doing. Do you remember a point where you kind of realized that what he was doing was really special?
Well, actually, I always felt it was really special because he had such odd hours. A lot of my friends had fathers who were engineers, and they would go to work in the morning and come back in the evening, you know, and put up their feet and watch TV or whatever. And, you know, their kids never saw them during the day. And my father would be gone for days on end sometimes, but he also sometimes would just be around. And he had all this stuff, all the trappings of photography all over the house. And he had a big studio. And, you know, each week when life came, we would peruse the photo credits to see if his pictures were in there. And so I always thought it was kind of cool.
He also, you mentioned his freelance assignments and some of the things that he did that were closer to his heart. One of those was traveling with your family to India. Tell me about that journey.
Well, when I was seven, my father's favorite uncle died. He had been a syndicated cartoonist and a lifelong bachelor who traveled the world constantly. He left my father $5,000, which was a lot in those days. And my parents rented the house, pulled my sister and me out of school, and took us to India for the better part of a year. It was enough to buy round-the-world plane tickets. And then my father got assignments, Life, Time, other publications, New York Times Magazine. He photographed John Kenneth Galbraith, who was the ambassador to India then. So we subsisted on his assignments, but at the same time, he took pictures of just ordinary people living their lives in the streets, in the villages. We traveled a great deal. It was a difficult time for my sister and me, but it was really a time when my father discovered the power of his occupation. And as a result of that year in India, there's a vast body of beautiful work that has never been published. So some of those pictures appear in this book.
What do you mean he really understood the power of what he was doing? What do you think helped him understand that on that trip?
Well, he was discovering the strength and the dignity of ordinary people, and that was really what most interested him. When he had news assignments, he didn't often get to pursue that main interest, although his, you know, many of his assigned pictures do reflect the strength and dignity of ordinary people. But this was, he was able to really devote himself to that for the better part of a year. And, you know, it was just a very important sensibility. And the pictures he took are absolutely astonishingly beautiful, and they're from those times, but they're also enduring pictures that I can look at again and again forever.
Absolutely. Well, and he continued to be a very principled man and a political man. He traveled to Chile to take pictures, but that also transformed him politically and personally as well. Tell me about that.
Right. In 1970, late 1970, the New York Times Magazine sent him to Santiago, Chile, to photograph the inauguration of Salvador Allende, who was the hemisphere's first democratically elected socialist president, elected on a broad platform of social revolution, basically. And after that, that turned into a cover story for the New York Times Magazine. But my dad became so interested in people he met on that trip that he continued to go back. Of course, 3 years later, with CIA backing, the military overthrew that elected government. And my father and also my mother, who had been working on the text of a book, didn't go back for many, many years until democratic elections were restored. And then they finished and self-published a book about Chile.
Looking at these remarkable pictures, you have chosen the title Juxtapositions for the book, and you have chosen to put pictures together that show us very different views of the world, but with echoes of similarity. What gave you the idea to publish these pictures in this way?
Well, someone asked me that a while ago, and I realized that the kernel of the idea probably came from a project I did my last semester teaching at Iowa, spring of 2015, when I worked with a group of students to mount a major exhibition of the work of a Chinese photographer. And part of that exhibit was organized around the idea of pairs of pictures, although these pairs were very specific. It was pictures from several decades ago and now of similar scenes to show social change. But I think that was where the idea of pairs lodged in my mind. And then I thought, well, it would be really cool to put some of these wonderful pictures together in ways my dad could never have imagined, because these pairs I chose were taken disparate places, disparate times, and there are all kinds of reasons for putting things together. Sometimes it's content, sometimes it's some theme in the picture, sometimes it's faces, sometimes it's one little detail. And it helped me cull down choices from this vast, vast archive that resides at the museum.
Well, and it also really brings home to the person who's going through the collection the juxtapositions in your father's career. Here he is taking pictures of the Kennedy family, and he's traveling to Chile, and he's traveling to China, and he's traveling to India, and everywhere taking pictures of ordinary people. But so he's photographing the royalty of the United States,
yeah,
and people everywhere. He had just an incredible, varied career.
Actually, in addition to Chile, another very important part of his work was his summer in Mississippi in 1964.
Oh, yes.
He photographed Freedom Summer for Time. He volunteered to go. Life already had very good coverage in the South, but Time didn't send anyone. And so he said, I'll go. And he wrote as well as took pictures. And he was there when the three civil rights workers disappeared. He has some of the final pictures of Mickey Schwerner and Andy Goodman alive. And he said it was an incredibly scary time, but he spent the entire summer there. He, in addition to taking pictures for Time, he donated a lot of his pictures to the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. The museum had an exhibit of some of them a couple of years ago for the 50th anniversary of Freedom Summer. So that was a very important time in his career also.
Well, and you said he said it was scary, but he actually said it was the most frightening experience he'd had in his life, which is saying a lot.
Right. Well, he had been in the Pacific Theater during World War II under Japanese bombs, but he was just a kid then. He probably was too dumb to be scared.
What did you have to do to go through your father's pictures and find the pictures for the collection? Did he leave a catalog, or were you going through boxes and boxes and boxes?
Well, after my dad died, my mom sought a good archive for them, and the museum, which was in the process of planning its big facility in Washington, D.C., but had a small place in Virginia, immediately took them. And it's estimated that they have 200,000 images, but only a small proportion of that has been digitized. And part of that is due to my mother's work. Before she handed everything over, she spent about 6 months with an assistant digitizing. So I kind of had a sense of what some of the good stuff was. And then the museum visual staff continued to digitize. So I had a subset to work with. So that helped a lot. But, you know, I had to look at just hundreds and hundreds of pictures to make these choices. But I didn't look at 200,000 pictures.
So is there one picture in the collection that when you look at it, you really see your dad? Does it really kind of sum up to you who he was?
Actually, no, because my dad is not in these pictures. I mean, his sensibility is in these pictures, but the pictures are about the people in the pictures. My dad really had no interest in being a celebrity photographer, had no interest in being known even, had no interest, had no ability at self-promotion. And so I think I see what he hoped people would see, which isn't him. It's the individuals in the pictures living their lives, doing their thing.
There's so much depth to these pictures, and I looked through them several times. When you look through them, do you still see new things?
Oh, sure, sure. I mean, one of my favorite pictures is the picture of the dancing girl on a street in Delhi. And she has a performance troupe with her, and the troupe is surrounded by beggars, essentially, who are watching the performance. And there's a beggar girl off to the right, clad in rags, who is fixated on the dancing girl, looking at her with such envy. And you look at this picture and you realize those two girls have exactly the same social status. One of them just is dressed up fancy. And every time you look at it, there are so many faces. I mean, I get more out of it. I see something else. So but there are quite a few pictures like that.
What do you think your dad would say about the collection?
He'd say, "Ah, this is cute." He'd say, "You know, it looks like you had fun." He'd make light of it. I mean, he was ridiculous when it came to himself and his own self-image.
Well, it really is a special collection. Judy, thank you so much for talking with me.
Well, thank you so much.
Judy Pollenbaum, she's Professor Emerita of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Iowa, and she's just put together a collection of her father's work. It's called Juxtapositions, Images from the Newseum Ted Pollenbaum Photo Collection, and she will be at Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. to share her father's work. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.